Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome, welcome to Verke Radio, iHeartRadio. This is the Power Woman on the Get Your Business Right show. We're here to help you make the right power moves, the right environment, the right people. Because guess what? We can be heard all over the world from iHeartRadio, Spotify, iTunes, wherever podcasts can be played. We are here to help you get your business right. That's right. Help you get your business right. And you know who I am? I'm Mr. Broadcastpreneur, a.k.a. the Fearless Coach, because overcoming your fears is not an option. And I'm excited because when people say social media is bad and social media is doing this, doing that, social media is actually bringing some of the thought leaders, the geniuses, and the people who are inspiring the world together quicker, faster, to make changes. And I have a gentleman on the line on with me today right now. He is doing just that. He saw that he wants to make a difference with his knowledge, his expertise, because he wants to see every woman and man live that American dream. Understand that the decisions you make with your home, decisions you make with your credit, can all benefit you. So let me introduce you to a man with many years of experience and has been there and done that, Mr. Paul Schumann. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing great, Michael. I'm ready to give out great information to these people and help them along the track in life. I've put a few years on in life and 46 years in business and 40 years in real estate and mortgage lending. I've learned and seen just about everything out there. So if somebody comes up with an idea or a question, I probably have seen it. And if I haven't, I probably know who has. So I am just ready to give out great information.
Well, Paul, that's exactly what I want to hear. But let's talk about you first, because, you know, we live in a world now where people are not trusting like they used to be. And so you have seen the change from the real estate industry, credit, mortgage, and et cetera.
Yes.
What's the one thing when it comes to those industries you have learned the most in the past 10 years?
Ooh, well, the market is changing out there. And in the real estate industry, it's shifting more to online stuff. What we're finding is the buyers that are coming to us are almost more educated about what's out there than sometimes we are. Because they sit for hours on the internet on Zillow and Realtor.com, and they start searching houses and they look in areas and things. A lot of times they show up in our office or they sit down and they meet with us and they go, yeah, we see these five houses. You know, tell us about these. And we'll go, wait a minute. Well, what are your needs? Because a lot of times Zillow and Realtor, so they make mistakes. They don't have the right market valuations and stuff. Whereas a local realtor in your area actually knows the houses. They yes. know, they've been inside of them. They've walked around them. They know the neighborhoods. Absolutely. And they can give you a lot more. But we're finding the buyers are saying, no, we already know what we want. And we're going, oh, okay, show us what you want. We pull up the information. And as we're going through it on the MLS, and we see real information, and we talk to them about it, sometimes we notice, oh, gee, that's not what we saw online. That's right. It's not. They have limited information. We have lots of information. I always suggest to people to sit down with the realtor, and even though you've done a tremendous amount of work online, what it may have done is narrowed down to how many square feet, how many bedrooms, what area you might be in, what kind of school systems you want. Those are important bits of information. Do you have kids? Are you retired? You know, what's your lifestyle about?
Yes.
We want to help them understand and match to their lifestyle. And put them in an area that they're comfortable in. You know, some people don't like high rises. Oh, they're scared of heights. Some people don't want to be in a crowded cul-de-sac. You know, they go, oh, no, I want land. Some people say, no, that's 2 acres. That's too much. I don't want to take care of that. So we need to know their lifestyle. We need to know their aspirations, Are they going to be raising kids? Do they need a good school system? What is it they want out of the next 5 to 10 years? Because typically a homeowner will buy a house, and typically about every 7 years, they'll look to a move. Either the kids have gone through school, they're going off to college, or they're just getting married and they're raising a family. So now they have to be in a different school system. Or maybe they want to move closer to their grandparents so the grandparents can do some babysitting for them. There's so many different reasons why people shift and change, job location changes, all sorts of stuff. So we need to know when they sit down with us, okay, you've done all this research, but what is it you want to do in the next 5 to 10 years in your life in this house? Right. Where do you want to be? Do you want to be next to your friends? Do you want to be close to your relatives? Do you want to be close to a school? You want to be close to a forest, you do hiking, backpacking. What is it you want in your life? And that's what the internet helps them understand a little bit what houses look like. But we have to get them into a different mindset going, what about your life? Mm. Where do you want to be? What's your lifestyle about? Yeah. And help them find the perfect house that fits their lifestyle for the next 5 to 10 years. That's what our job is.
Yeah, and I love what you said there, Paul, lifestyle.
Yes.
You took it beyond the brick and mortar of the home.
Exactly.
To really look at the decisions of child rearing, the lifestyle of what do they do?
Yeah.
No, if you like to hike, it would make more sense to live somewhere where that's more feasible. It makes sense to have a house. Well, you says to have a house is beautiful, but it's 5 hours away from the hiking.
Yeah. It's like people who love to travel all over the place. I'd recommend a condominium to them. Why? Because they don't have to worry about yard work. They don't have to worry about other things. And typically in a condominium, there's a little bit more security. People have to be checked in, checked out. There's cameras everywhere. Things are going like that. So they're a little safer if they go, hey, I'm going to leave for a couple months. And they can lock their doors and feel a little bit safer. But if they leave a single family residence and it's not watched out and newspapers build up, crooks come by, they say, oh no, the trash hasn't been put out, so they're not here, let's break in. And the cops will tell you, you know, have lights going on and off, have neighbors come over and check your property, because you don't know if a water break happens, if something else happens that you're unaware of, or a house has been broken into, when they see a broken window or something, so they can call the police for you. So having a single family residence is great for families and people that are there all the time. But if you're a traveler, we recommend more security and the ability to leave your premises and travel on a cruise, go around the world, do whatever you want to do, and know that when you come back, everything is safe and sound.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense right there. Just
there's where your lifestyle comes in.
Yes. And what would you say for picking a home that's picking a home that's in a person's proper budget? Because, of course, people could look at a home, but I remember growing up, now I'm not sure if this changed, but this may have changed now. I don't know how it is now. I remember you're supposed to be able to buy a home 3 times your income. So if you make $100,000 a year, you could buy a home that's $300,000. Is that rule still applicable, or has the market and the financing world changed some?
Well, I've never used that rule personally. It's not what you gross to how much your house is. Everything today is based on payments. And you're right about the percentages. Typically, a lender will want to see about a 33% mortgage rate for your payment versus your income. In other words, what your paycheck's coming in. Because they also know that you've got homeowners insurance, you've got maintenance and repair on it, you're going to have upgrades fixed, you know, things are going to go wrong with the house, you might have to fix a roof, plumbing breaks, you know, you've got cars to pay for, kids to pay for. So they're looking at only a third of your income should be going towards your house payment.
Yeah.
And because the interest rates keep fluctuating out there, it changes the values of houses.
Mm.
And when the interest rate goes down, house payments or the prices go up. Because what's interesting is everything is based on a payment. So when a house goes up and the mortgage interest rates go down like this, you're actually still getting the same payment. You're still getting the same house. It's just the owner of the house just made more money because he could raise his price because your payment hasn't changed. Mm. The interest rates went down, so you can raise it, but the house went up. So you really didn't get much a better deal on the house because the house went up when the rates went down. And that's why we've been seeing the real estate market lasting much longer than it should have ever have lasted. We should have seen a 10-year turnaround into a recession and pulled us back a ways. Only because when you have a market that's being fueled for way too many years, when we do get an adjustment in the market, it could be like another 2008. On, hey, you know, we normally have a 7-year minor 5%, 8% minor fluctuation. Things change a little bit. Interest rates go up. You know, the economy is doing good. So they should be raising interest rates.
Right.
Well, if the economy is going good, why are the feds lowering the interest rates? Because the economy down underneath is a little unstable. What they're seeing is the employment rates are very, very low. And we saw that from the Obama administration when he took over from Bush and Bush destroyed everything. The unemployment was about 8.5%. And over the years, Obama took it down to about 4.7, which was a huge shift. And then Trump came in and took it from 4.7 to 3.5 by stimulating the economy by basically dumping in cheap money.
Okay.
And he's got the feds to now lower the interest rates when theoretically, when an economy is doing very good and people are employed, interest rates are supposed to go up to avoid inflationary problems. But right now we have inflationary problems because housing prices go up. Why? Because mortgage interest rates went down. The stock market is being fueled by cheap money. When you can go to the big five, FANG, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, and the other five that are out there, they're driving the stock market up. They're borrowing money at 0% interest and they're buying their stocks back. It's driving their prices up. But the company hasn't changed.
Exactly.
And so we're seeing an economy that's built on interest rates.
I'm glad you said that, Paul. This is a question here. You mentioned interest rates and you've mentioned the companies buying back the stock.
Yes.
What is going to happen with these companies who hold these pensions? When the baby boomers really start to pull the bulk of their money back each month in dividends, and they're not really worth what they've been saying they're worth?
Well, therein lies the question when you say dividends. If the stock prices go up because they're buying back the stock off the internet, therefore there's less stock for the valuation of the company. Primarily, the people who win the most are the big CEOs and the big guys because they have the most stock. Everybody else has got little bits of stock, so they get some benefit. But the dividends will go up too because the dividends are based on the number of shares of stock versus the amount of money coming in. They split up the dividends. So the dividends will go up a little bit, which makes it even better to drive the stock price up a little bit more because people go, oh, wow, we could buy that and get a good dividend. But what's interesting, the dividend is still just a percentage of what you're paying for the stock. In other words, if you get a 5% interest dividend, which is a big high one, the stock is worth $100. You're getting 5%, you get a $5 dividend. But if they artificially move the stock to $200, then the dividend is $10. It's still a 5% dividend, but you had to pay more for the stock to get a higher dividend. The percentages are what people look at. And most people don't do that. They look at, oh, I could buy this stock and get $10.
Exactly. So
when people really spend the time to evaluate what the market is doing and how it works, they're going to see that there's an unsettling thing. We look at the unemployment. Again, when Obama brought it down to 4.7 and then it got dropped lower, why did it go lower? Well, again, there was a financial stimulus that the feds came into the market with, and the job market was stimulated. By now, we're moving minimum wage up to $15 an hour. Well, what it did was it took poor people out there the ability to get some work, some income. Still not enough to take them out of poverty. Still not enough to really, I mean, when you think about it, $15 an hour isn't a whole heck of a lot of money.
No.
If you're living in San Diego, if you're living in San Francisco, if you're living in New York or wherever, your rent payments are $2,500 or more per month.
You're in trouble.
You barely made that.
So exactly.
It may be that more people are being employed, but a not lot more people are coming out of the poverty area. It just means that more people are working to make a bare living. But until we shift how the economy really works, there's still a problem. Housing prices are still very difficult for people to afford. Because again, interest rates come down. The wage went up. But you look back in 1950, when a house might cost you $5,000. And you look at today, that same house might be $300,000. Well, what has your wages gone up from about $2.20 to $15? But when you think of what it costs to make the mortgage payment, the numbers don't jive anymore.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Income hasn't kept up with inflation.
Yeah. When you go back and you go, okay, you know, your income was $2 an hour, now it's $15. Wow, that went up 700%. Yeah, okay. Your $5,000 house went to $300,000. It's a little bit more than seven times.
You're right about that.
And when you look at the upkeep, maintenance, and repairs and everything on today's dollars, it no longer makes any sense. The economy hasn't caught up to what inflation has been pushing, even though the Fed say, well, there's no inflation. And why are you lowering interest rates to stir the economy when housing prices are just going up? Stock market is going up. Why are you lowering interest rates? The only reason is to stimulate and keep the economy from sliding backwards.
And you're going to do that for so long, Paul. And you know what? It's time for us to take a quick break.
Okay.
And we're back on a Get Your Business Right show on Verkay Radio. And we had the phenomenal Paul Schulman dishing up all the basics on surviving in this economy. And Paul, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, and thank you for having me. I just absolutely love to help people.
And we're going to talk about the part we want to talk about now, Paul, is the part that I really believe you're an expert in, being a debt relief specialist, because I truly believe the way between the lack of financial education in school, the lack of financial education at home, it has created a society of people who are consumers who don't understand the game of money, don't know the language of money, and now between student loan and all other types of debt, people are in trouble. So how are you helping people get out of debt, being a debt relief specialist?
Okay, there's a couple different ways that I give people to think about. You know, when I work on debts, I step in as a professional and I can actually, I can get debts probably lower than they can. Primarily, if you have, I'm just going to use an example of credit card debt. And right now, we got about $1.4 trillion worth of credit card debt. Why? Because you're right. People are consumers. They're taught on television to buy, spend. Use this credit card. You'll get reward benefits. I mean, I don't think a week goes by when I get two or three offers saying 0% interest rate. Buy this, use this credit card. Get these rewards. 60,000 travel miles. Do this. Everything is about consumer spending and using more credit. Nobody realizes that at some point in time, you have to pay it back.
Yes.
The 0% interest rates go away, and all of a sudden, your payment went from $50 a month to $300 a month because the interest rates are unlike anything we have seen in many, many, many decades. Back in 2005, 2006, interest rates on credit cards typically were about 6%. You know, if you had a halfway decent score, you got a 6-7% on your interest rate on your credit cards.
Right.
Today, my wife, who I got her credit score up to 840 out of 850, she applied for a credit card. Sure, they got a great credit line, 26% interest. Now, here's somebody who's got an 840 FICO score, wow, comes back with a 26% interest rate.
26% interest.
26%.
With excellent credit.
Excellent credit.
Yeah, that sounds like the interest rate for someone with below average credit.
Yes. And what's interesting is what I have been seeing in the industry, I haven't looked at every one of them, but I have not seen an interest rate on a credit card below 15%. Period. It just doesn't exist. You know, I've got, I think, 11 credit cards. And I play a credit card game because I know how to do it safely. And matter of fact, in the last 10 years of utilizing my own system that I do, I have not paid any interest on a credit card ever. Mm.
So
10 years.
So I'm going to assume, and if I'm wrong, correct me.
Sure.
The secret I was showing was that you get a card that has a 0% balance transfer.
Yep.
Get that paid off. And when that's up, find another one, do the same thing. And that way you're making your purchases, you're living your life, you have your cash, you have that money available there. And as long as you pay it off each month, and like I say, you continue to transfer those balance transfers at 0%, and it puts you in a position where you can start, a person can really make more investments and make better financial decisions.
And the way I look at things and the way I play the game, and again, this is just how I do it. Anybody can do it a lot of different ways. I use something called a family bank. And it's something that people might want to look up. It's a way of putting a savings account together that you borrow money from yourself after you start putting money into it. You use yourself as a bank and you actually pay yourself interest on it. You pay yourself interest to the bank account and you actually write yourself a little note. Put out the details, the terms, the interest rate, whatever you want to do. So you get your mindset away from borrowing from banks and start setting yourself up as a family bank. That's how all the wealthy people do it. You know, if they can get interest from a bank at 0%, they'll take it. But if they have to pay a high interest rate, they're going to borrow it from their own bank accounts.
Exactly. Because
why? What is your bank account currently earning? A tenth of a percent per year? Quarter of a percent per year? What are you paying on your credit cards? 15, 20% per year? Is there a little bit of a discrepancy here? So the banks are holding your money in a savings account and you're paying them 30, 40 times the amount in interest back on a credit card. Why? Mm-hmm. So what I show people is if you're going to get a 0% interest rate credit card, set up a savings account. And I recommend looking out there for like maybe Barclays or one of the other ones online. The reason being is right now their interest rate on just a savings account with no minimum deposit is about 2.25%, maybe higher.
Okay.
Versus 0.1% at your regular savings account.
You're right about
that. So what I do is I can then take the money that I would normally pay for the credit card at 0%, I'm going, okay, instead of me paying the minimum, which would be $30 or whatever it is, I'll pay $200 or $250, but I'll put it into my savings account. So each month, my savings account is now building up, but it's building up at 2.25% to 2.5% interest. Credit cards at 0%. So all along, by the time when I get ready to pay the credit card off, I have a choice. Right. I can go out and get another 0% interest rate credit card and balance transfer it to it, which will typically cost me anywhere from 1 to 3 points. So it's an offset on your bank account because your bank account's around 2.5, but you're back to 0%. Now all that money's been balance transferred over. And again, you keep making payments to your family bank every month, just as if you're paying the credit card off. So at any moment in time, if you start going for a mortgage loan, and I'm going to shift a little bit into why this is important for different balances.
Real quick, for Paul, when you mentioned Jimmy Banks, I want to make sure we're on the same page here. Is this the same system that Garrett Gunderson talked about, like in his book, Sacred Cow, and what would the Rockefellers do, and how they build their trust up, and how when they need money, that is pretty much the same ideal system?
Yes.
Okay.
Essentially, instead of getting into the complicated trusts, instead of spending lots of money because they have it, you don't. All you need is a simple savings account. That's all. Open it up anywhere you want. I only recommend you go on Google and search for the highest interest rates online, offline, wherever you want to find it, so that you get a decent return on your money. Even though 2.5% is not a decent return, it's the best in the industry.
It's just the best there is right now.
It's the best there is, right. So I suggest to people, they do something like this and get in the habit of paying themselves back to the bank. Mm. Reason being is, as they start growing and earning more money, that family bank can become very powerful. Because what you can do is, as it starts to build, and let's just say you get a bonus in, you get another check in, whatever, you can then pay your credit cards off to zero, but you still have your family bank bill. That's your savings account. That's your emergency fund, but it's more than that. It's your bank. So the next time you go out and say, hey, you don't have a 0% interest rate credit card right now, and you don't want to go out and apply for one and take a week or two to get the cards and get all you can done. You need to do something now. So you go to your bank and you borrow it. Your bank, charge yourself 10% interest. Mm. It's your own money. But now you're going to get in the habit of making payments back to yourself with an interest. That money is worth something. And when you start understanding what it's worth to you, you'll get a better feel for it. And again, it's only building up your personal bank account. It's not going to Wells Fargo or Bank of America. It's going to John Q. Public.
Mm.
They're keeping the money. It's in an account for them. And anytime they want to borrow it, they pay themselves back with interest. So the account keeps growing. And it's called Family Bank. And you might be able to look it up on the internet. I don't know if it's out there, but I know I used to go to a seminar, and literally what they did was they had Family Bank in it. They taught us how to do this. It is really interesting. So what I tell people is, when you're doing all of this, the reason why you want to be able to have access to all of this extra money is, if you want to buy a house, if you want to buy a car, they're going to look at your credit score.
Right.
And if you have too much credit card debt, if your debt to the credit ratio is lopsided, too much debt to the amount of credit you have, it drops your score. When your score goes down, you pay a higher interest rate on your mortgage loan or your car loan or whatever you're borrowing. The idea is, before you do that, about 45 to 60 days, pay down your debt to as close to zero as possible. Again, because it takes 30 days or more for your credit score to start shifting and changing. Because the credit card companies, even though they're paid off, they typically will only send their credit information in once a month via an electronic transfer. Right. So it could take a month to 45 days for your actual payments to fluctuate and your score to start jumping. Mm. Some cards are getting a little bit faster at it, but pretty much it takes a little bit. So now when it drops down, you get the better score.
Exactly.
You get the better interest rates.
And you know, Paul, we're getting close to the end of this interview. And so what are the things that a person needs to do to safeguard themselves and put themselves in a good position financially?
Financially, I always have people, I tell them, monitor your credit report. A lot of people, believe it or not, forget to look, and things can happen. We're in a society right now where identity theft is huge, and you will never know when somebody hacks into your account or does something unless you keep an eye on it. And you can join credit monitoring services. You can go to Credit Karma, which is free. I think Credit Sesame is also free. You can look at your credit reports. They'll give you a summary.
Yes.
And what you want to make sure is there's nothing on there unusual or different. You don't have to pay for their scores and monitoring. Most Credit Karma is like free. And I suggest to people just look at that to keep up to date on things. And again, just to touch base, I know we're almost out of time, but on debt settlements, if you've got a lot of debt and you're scared, you don't know what to do, and you think bankruptcy may be your only way out, but you're afraid of bankruptcy because what it'll do to your credit for 10 years, there is something called debt settlement. And what it is when professionals, or even yourself, you can do this on your own. You can contact any credit that there is and just say, hey, I'm in trouble. What can you do to help me get out of this debt problem? They can either put you on a lower payment, drop your interest rates, or if you say, listen, I can borrow some money from my family members, I don't have any, what is the lowest you will allow me to pay this debt off as settlement in full?
Mm.
And typically they'll come back and they'll say, oh, 80%. Well, that's not what the industry standard is. For us, we typically try and get them down to about 30%.
Right.
Because if there's a true hardship, and again, there has to be a true hardship. You had to have lost your job, a death in a family, serious illness, something going on why you can no longer make these payments, and it might be a hardship for you to ever continue. And you put it in writing. Don't lie to them. But you can tell the truth in a way that is very emotional. And that's what I suggest to people. If there's a hardship, make it an emotional hardship. The person at the other end reading this has to have a reason why they want to be able to settle your debt for less. And that's what we suggest to people, is contact them. If you get a stumbling, if they're just stuck there, or they send you over to a collection agency who plays hardball with you, just remember, there's something called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Well, that tells the collector they can only call you between certain hours, between like 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. After that, not on weekends. They can't call you at your work. Tell them don't. As a matter of fact, you can write them a letter and just say, based on the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, I never want to hear from you again. Don't ever call me. That's all you have to say. The collection agency can only make one more phone call to you, and that's to say, we have your letter and we're never going to call you again. Everything will be in writing. And that's all they can do. They'll send you a letter. Most of the time, that makes them go away and you never hear from them again.
Mm.
The side point is, you have to be very careful where the statute of limitations are in your state, because they're different in every state. And if the last payment you made on your debt, it has passed the statute of limitations, meaning like in California, it's 4 years. So if the last time you paid on your credit card was 5 years ago, and you get a call from a collector saying, we're trying to collect on this debt, and you know it's been past the statute, you can merely tell the collector, excuse me, you're beyond the statute of limitations. Please don't ever call me again. And you can take this debt, throw it in the trash can, because one, they can't sue you. That's what the statute does. It blocks their legal limitations of ever suing you.
Right.
Without a judgment, it's almost impossible to collect on a debt.
Mm.
And they'll go away. That's what the statute of limitation helps the general public, so that they are not haunted for the next 15, 20 years by people threatening to sue them and take them to court and attach their wages or do whatever.
Right.
But again, you've got to look up in your state. California is 4 years. I've seen 6 years. I've seen 8 years. So you really have to look. Okay. And again, it depends upon what kind of debt you're doing. Credit card debt is different from a bank loan versus an unsecured card or anything else. They vary. And you'll see, they'll spell out what the statute is in your state. So don't be afraid if a collector calls you. You have more rights than they do. Don't be afraid of them. But the one thing I warn people, if a debt collector calls, the first thing is never, ever, ever say that, yes, I owe that money. The first thing out of your mouth is, I don't believe I owe that. I want my debt validated in writing.
Mm.
Okay. And now that is a very complex process that the collector has to go through.
Right.
And it's very time consuming. And typically they'll get frustrated and he sent them a letter saying, I want this validated. I want it validated the way the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act says you have to validate it in all details of every credit I've ever charged from the time I had my credit card today and why and where you get this balance from.
That's right.
90% of the time you'll never hear from them again.
That's right. And so Paul, what's the best way for a person to get in contact with you so they can
I have a couple of different emails. My fun one is called justcallpaul@gmail.com. So people that know my name, Paul, they say, oh, just call Paul. He's got the answer to almost everything out there in the financial world. Or they can call my email my company address, which is paul@wisewealthchoices.com. That's WISE. Wealth, WEALTH, choices, choices.com, wisewealthchoices.com. And I'll respond to you. Ask me any question you want on any area in the financial arena. Again, if I don't have an answer, I will probably email you back where you can find the answer. So
that's right.
Don't be afraid to ask. And I have had some very, very silly questions. But what I have learned in life is if they're asking that question, it's because they don't know the answer.
That's right.
So I've learned there are no silly questions, stupid questions, or any type of questions, because if you don't know the answer, it's not stupid. You need to know, and I will help you.
That's right. Well, Paul, I appreciate you for coming on, Paul. You have shared a wealth of knowledge. Anyone who listens to this will definitely know that, hey, I need to think differently about my credit. I need to think differently about money. I need to think differently about preserving wealth and attaining wealth for my family. So I just want to thank you so much for coming on today on the Get Your Business Right show.
Well, Michael, it's a pleasure being on board. If you ever want me back and you've got a list of questions from your listeners that they want in-depth things and maybe they missed how to get a hold of me or whatever, I'd be more than happy to come back and go through anything that you want.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to having you back again. And so, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it, Mr. Paul Schumann. And we're definitely looking forward to having him back again on the Get Your Business Right show or here on VertK Radio coming from New York City. And you already know, I love you, God loves you, and there's nothing you could do about it. We'll see you next time.
And Santa Claus loves you too.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.